whether it's the perfect complement to your Thanksgiving feast or the perfect escape from your Thanksgiving guests. Wine will be a prominent element of this week's holiday celebrations. It's been a long time since many families will have gathered this way, for better or for worse, so it might as well be special. Here to help us out with some wine ideas and to catch us up on wine news is Kansas City's Master of Wine and Master Sommelier, Doug Frost. Doug, good to see you again.
Nice to see you as well. It's great to be face-to-face for a change.
And I'm pleased to say that helping us sample wines this morning is KCUR's Carlos Moreno. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm honored.
This is kind of the peak of your time at KCUR, you know.
This is extraordinary.
he drew the right straw.
It's fairly early in his time with us. All right. So, Doug, we are going to sample some wines that you're going to recommend to us along the way, even as we talk. So let's tell us what this first wine is that you've poured.
So I've got a Riesling, and it's a German Riesling, and I know a lot of people's first response will be, well, that's a sweet wine, and mm-hmm. I'm not wild about sweet wines. Or some people will be like, oh, perfect, you started with a sweet wine. And the truth is that Riesling is merely a grape, and Germany is a country that produces an enormous amount of wine, both sweet and dry. And indeed, for a lot of people, it would be surprising to discover that most German Riesling is dry. Now, the one that I brought has a little touch of sweetness to it because I kind of like it. And I always think of Thanksgiving table as having a lot of sweet things, whether it's the marshmallows on top of the sweet potatoes or the brown sugar that seems to get thrown all over the place, like on top of the green beans and stuff, or the sweet tart of the cranberry sauce or whatever it is. I mean, turkey itself has a touch of sweetness to it to me, or at least the meat seems to. So I think that it makes sense, frankly, for a lot of people that if you're going to have something that's eating something that's slightly sweet, you have a wine that's slightly sweet as well. And the truth is, from a standpoint of a sommelier, you typically want the wine to be as sweet or sweeter than the food. So that becomes important at dessert time. And of course, I brought something for that.
I'd like to report that KCUR's up-to-date senior producer, Danny Alexander, has snuck into the studio and poured herself a glass of the wine as you described it.
So. She looked really comfortable
doing
that.
She did. She didn't hesitate at all. She's claiming it's for Michael Byers, but I think it's actually for her. I do want to ask you, I mean, we haven't talked in a while, Doug, and we've been living through this pandemic. Certainly the pandemic was a time where a lot of people drank wine, but it's actually been kind of a tough time for wine producers, I understand. How did the pandemic affect the industry?
It definitely affected the industry in multifarious ways. There's no question that people talk about the increased retail sales, and that's certainly true, but it's also true that most of those retail sales benefited large producers almost solely. You know, if you think about some of the smaller wineries in and around, let's say, Kansas City, their doors were closed for a period of time. And so they certainly couldn't do the business that they were used to doing. The grocery stores were doing fine. The large, the liquor stores that were buying from the large distributors were selling more wine than ever before. And as people weren't going out to dinner, they were taking those bottles home. In the meanwhile, things have gotten better for a lot of wineries who figured out how to do direct business. And there's no question that wine sales have gone up. But as you well know, in the meanwhile, we had weather events, we had climate events, and so it's been it's been a crazy couple of years. But that's true for everybody.
It is. And so with that in mind, taking advantage of this new emergence from the crazy couple of years, let's taste this wine, this Riesling that you've poured for us. Carlos Moreno, you've had a chance to think a little about this. What's your reaction?
I appreciate this one. This is it's not super sweet, and I was telling Doug that in years past we used to drink a lot of Riesling at Thanksgiving, and we kind of quit because we were getting a very sweet Riesling, and we didn't enjoy it. But this one is pleasurable. I like this.
Remind us which Riesling we're drinking, Doug.
So the name of the producer is Monchoff, and it's actually a family. The Imail family own the estate, and it's one of those estates that not in the most recent flood, but in the previous floods in Germany, actually the barrels were floating down the river for a time. But it is
save them? Did they rescue them?
They got the barrels back. Okay. I mean, the wine at that point is pretty well ruined,
yeah.
but it is a it's a name that I utterly trust, and I love that the wine has this, you know, tartness at the end, even though there's this sweetness in the front, this friendliness in the front. There's this just wonderful lemon limey tartness right at the end that makes you want to have another drink, and I call that balance.
I agree. I find that there is sweetness for sure at the beginning, but it's not. It's a very pleasant drink. I can imagine this on a porch on a summer day, but I can also imagine this right before Thanksgiving dinner. It turns out that Danny did deliver that glass to KCUR's Michael Byers. Michael, you have any reactions?
I love my job. I just want to say that right now. I absolutely love. But no, everything that everyone has said about this Riesling, I 100% agree with. I was talking with Danny, actually, and we like a Riesling that has a little bit of sweetness, but not overly so, not overbearing with the sweet factor. And this is a perfect. It straddles the line perfectly. It's very refreshing. It's a light drink, and it definitely one that I would see enjoying in a variety of situations. This is delicious.
Excellent. So a good German Riesling to start your Thanksgiving feast. What are you pouring for us next, Doug?
Well, you know, it's time for a little rosé. I think rosé once upon a time was sort of a, well, it was expected to be sweet, and that world has changed. You know, that ship has long sailed. It's very much now about you know, this kind of pale pink orange Provençal color. This is in fact a brand called Le Provençal. It comes from the Côte de Provence or the hills of Provence, and rosés from that neck of the woods are light and crisp and almost even kind of airy and refreshing. You know, you have to remember that part of France is a tourist place now. You know, what do tourists like to drink when they go somewhere? Drink pink. So, you know, it's just a fun, easy to, you know, gulp kind of pink wine.
I have to say, I think I was hosting this show with you on a day before Thanksgiving some years ago, where you recommended a rosé as a good pairing for the typical Thanksgiving foods. And we've had rosé on our Thanksgiving table ever since because of that. So thank you for that. why is that? Tell us, what is it about rosé that pairs so well with turkey and gravy and stuffing and mashed potatoes?
Well, certainly turkey is not a big, powerful protein. So I typically think that the wine shouldn't overpower the food and the food shouldn't overpower the wine. Now, stuffing, there's all kinds of different stuffing. So we really can't even, you know, go down that rabbit hole to talk about each and every version that might be out there. I think the bottom line is that it's a refreshing, lighter style drink. So it's happy with those same kinds of foods. But one of the funny little weird, I think, secrets about rosé wine is that egg dishes, you know, like deviled eggs and things like that, are particularly difficult on wine. But for some reason, and I think it has to do with the fact that rosés are essentially white wines made from red grapes, that there's something about the bitterness or astringency that's in a typical red wine that clashes with an egg. But just to have a little bit, because it's a, as I say, a white wine made from red grapes, is sort of ideal. So I just think rosé is just the easy to please a whole bunch of folks kind of wine.
And what is the grape that's making this particular rosé wine?
Typically, you're working with a blend of grapes. You can see Sanceau, you can see Grenache, you can see Carignan. There are different grapes that you'll see down there, and that is, to me, the reason that people use different grapes is to create complexity. That when you're working in a warmer site, and as you get closer to the Mediterranean, it gets warmer, certainly, during the day. As you're working with grapes from a warmer site, you need to add grapes in order to create greater complexity. It's sort of to me, it's a truism in the wine world that if you're working in a cooler site, one grape can give you complexity. But if you're working in a warmer site, you probably want to blend different grapes together.
Carlos Moreno, you've had a chance to sample this rosé. What are your thoughts?
This one surprised me. Like Doug said, you know, the perception of rosés is that they're super sweet or they're very sweet. And this one, again, is not super sweet. And this falls into a line that I think I would compliment. We're doing Asian for Thanksgiving this year. And I think this might work very well with our Asian Thanksgiving feast.
Wait, we have to do a side conversation. Carlos, you're having an Asian Thanksgiving feast this
year. Yes.
Not turkey and stuffing.
Nope, no turkey, no stuffing. We did this last year and everyone loved it, so we're sticking with the plan.
All right, so the rosé goes with even non-traditional Thanksgiving feasts. The rosé, I find it to be... It's interesting you used the word bitter and astringent, and I do find a little of that bitterness here, which I... which I can imagine is a nice contrast to some of the richer, butterier, if that's a word, Thanksgiving foods.
Yeah, no, I think it is. I think the idea is always that you want foods and wines to complement each other. So often chefs perceive that as being, well, let's make sure the same flavors are on the table that are, you know, on the plate that are in the wine. I've never understood that idea. To me, it's more, how can they speak to each other? But this is, at this point, we get into the sort of silliness, decoder ring-ness of the sommelier community, where we somehow try to convince people that there's one wine, this is the only wine you should be drinking, when the truth is, drink the damn wine that you like to drink, and I'm sure the food's going to be happy.
Which
with
is
that.
Always the advice of the wine experts. Drink
exactly.
the wine you like.
Drink the damn wine that makes you happy. But yeah, now I'm pouring a bubbly.
Very good. As we might have heard, Doug was working ahead and popping that that bubbly bottle. You're listening to Up to Date on KCUR 89.3. I'm Brian Ellison. Doug Frost, Kansas City's Master of Wine and Wine Master Sommelier, is here, and we're sampling wines and talking about the wine world. The KCUR talk show studio, you should know, gets very busy whenever we're doing this show. There are more people walking around in here than I think we've seen in a couple of years. Doug, what's this next wine we're drinking?
Well, this is a wine from that has the name Cerdon or Cerdon Bougie. It's relatively obscure. So,
yeah.
You know, people may want to go online and see the pictures.
Spell Cerdon for us.
Cerdon is C-E-R-D-O-N.
Okay.
And Bougie looks like buggy. But it's from a producer named Renaudin.
Bougie means something else, I guess.
Yes.
Think,
but, well, it's the name of a place. And, right. and the wine here is actually mostly the Gamay grape. And I wanted to bring this for two purposes. One, because it's just stupid delicious. And I just wanted to have a chance to drink it.
It's also beautiful. The
it
color.
Is gorgeous.
How do you
it?
Describe this color?
Yeah, so it's not the eye of the partridge or eau de patrie, as the French call it. This has far more of a, you know, kind of psychedelic pink look to it. It's really pretty, and it's a what we call a method ancestral, so or similar to what people today call pet nat, which is to say you just stick a fermenting wine in a bottle and let it finish its work, and that's what happens here. And it's mostly the Gamay grape with a little bit of a grape called Pulsar. And Gamay, I wanted to bring a Gamay along, but thought, well, I can only bring so many wines.
Oh, I disagree with that thinking, but go on.
Nice. So I really highly recommend Beaujolais, particularly Beaujolais Cru. That's to say one of the elevated villages of Beaujolais rather than just Beaujolais or Beaujolais Village. I really recommend those wines with Thanksgiving dinner. And when you get to Asian stuff, because we're playing around with like a fish sauce and we're going to have some sriracha on the table just because I'm addicted to sriracha.
Oh, absolutely.
I like wines like this. This has some sweetness to it. I mean, you can use this for dessert if you want to, but it's the bubbles create a sensation of dryness. So most sparkling wines have some sugar to them because most people like to have a little bit of sweetness to counterbalance that the dryness that's created by the CO2 gas.
Yeah, it's not champagne. Mm-mm. It's but the bubbles kind of make the wine.
Yeah, it's a crazy thing, really.
It's a happy wine. Just like Doug said, this wine makes me happy. This is something I can see popping right after our meal and enjoying, like you said, for dessert. This is just a very fun, light, crispy little popping glass of wine.
Yeah, crispy is a good word, too. There's not a lingering aftertaste to this. It's a refreshing, refreshing pour. Michael Byers.
First of all, yes, it's incredible. I love this wine. For whatever reason, I'm getting notes of strawberry.
Oh, for sure. Yes.
In this. It's definitely got between the combination of grapes and the carbonation, there's definitely a strawberry hint to it, a strawberry feel to it that's very, very pleasant.
Yeah, I quite agree. I mean, it's like strawberry soda meets, you know, some black cherry juices in there. A little raspberry note is in there.
Strawberry soda that leveled up.
And the red color
leveled up
probably
indeed.
Contributes to that perception. So tell us again the name of this for folks who might want to look for it.
So this wine is called Cerdon Bougie, and it's from a producer named Renaudin Fache. And we'll have pictures of the bottles online so people can find these things, because that one, I'll admit, is a bit obscure, but I just I drank it a couple of weeks ago and fell head over heels in love and thought, I gotta show people this is cool.
Well, it's a good day for me when I see Doug Frost reach into his bag and pull out the previously undisclosed fourth bottle of wine. But while we're working on that, let me ask you a question, Doug. We know that another piece of the news this year in the wine world has been what's been going on out west, especially for American wines. Obviously, in Europe, there's been flooding, and that's affected the winemakers there. But out in California, out in the Pacific Northwest, there's been drought. There have been wildfires. That's had an impact on winemakers, too. Maybe some good and some not so good.
Well, I think mostly not so good. It's been a difficult couple of years. 2020 was just nasty for a whole lot of reasons. And certainly for those of us who grow grapes, and I'm involved with a wine in Walla Walla, Washington, a winery, I should say, we lost some of our grapes due to the smoke. Smoke will get into the grapes themselves, and there's really not a damn thing you can do about it. It just starts to make the wines taste like the winemaker is addicted to cool menthol cigarettes or something, and won't stop smoking them while making wine. Right. It's not a very attractive characteristic. So some people in 2020 didn't make wine at all. Some people figured out how to just harvest the grapes early. Certainly, we were fortunate. The style that we use to make the winery I'm involved in, Echolands, is to pick earlier than others. So we were literally harvesting and processing, you know, crushing all of our Syrah grapes just as the smoke rolled in. Mm. So we dodged the bullet in that sense. But most people did not. Most people don't pick as early as we do, and that, you know, that sucked. Fires, obviously, particularly last year, there were people who lost their wineries due to the fires. Vineyards are a bulwark against most fires. Interestingly, fires typically will stop at the edge of a vineyard.
They're a fire line, basically.
Yeah, they are a fire line. I'd like to think it's aesthetic. They're like, oh, not here. Let's go around and destroy someone's home. But in fact, it is that the vegetation is, and the fact that it's usually a fairly green and robustly growing and active area means that the fire, you know, works as a fire break and it goes to someplace drier instead.
And yet at the same time, there was also drought, so places not as affected by the fire. Sometimes a lack of rain can actually affect the flavor of wine in maybe some interesting ways, right?
Yeah, indeed. I would certainly say 2021, for our purposes, it became unbelievably hot in the vineyards. It was 118 degrees in one of our vineyards, which is a temperature never seen before. It was 115 in Portland, Oregon. Just chew on that one for a second. And, yeah, you know, it definitely had an impact upon the grapes. It was hard to tell what was happening for sure. What I would say is to give you kind of the snapshot of it, we ended up with between one third and one half as many grapes as we usually have because the plant was trying to protect itself from this incredible heat. And certainly we are dealing with a lack of moisture as well in many places along the West Coast. And the grapes often will become small and the skins get tougher and thicker. And you know what? That can actually make a more profound wine, a more intense and denser wine. And if that's the style that you're going for, and many people are trying to make these big, bold, powerful red wines, man, that weather is perfect for you. We're trying to make a more elegant style. So our way to deal with it, like I said, is just harvest a little bit earlier. Try to get, you know, irrigation into those grapevines if you can.
Yeah.
And try to ameliorate the effects of that weather.
All right. So, Doug, you've given us one last wine to contemplate for our Thanksgiving feasts. What have you poured for us?
So I poured a Grenache, and Grenache is a grape that can make incredibly powerful wines like Chateauneuf-du-Pape or Priorat. It can make a simple fruity red wine like the Le Provençal, or it can make something kind of in between, which is what I try to do with this particular Grenache with Echolands. But I would say
this is one of your wines.
This, yeah, you know, it crawled into my hand, honest, Ma. It just, you know,
I'm not objecting. It's delicious.
Yeah, we try to just make it into this sort of simple, crushable, gulpable kind of red wine. And I would just lead people to particularly the Rhone Valley in southern France, where a whole bunch of Grenache is made at all price levels. I mean, you can go out and find a Côte de Rhone for $12, or you can spend $40, you know, whatever you want to spend. And frankly, I think they're all worth it. The only thing I'd say is you probably don't want to buy a 10-year-old version of one of those wines. They typically last or show their best when they're like 2 to 5 years old, unless you're dealing with that upper echelon like Shot Enough to Pop, and then go for it, man.
Carlos Moreno, your reaction?
This is the wine that I'm going to sit down by the fire outside with my wife Thursday night and sip. This is going to go very well, just relaxing into the evening, sitting by the fire.
Awesome.
That's an excellent and picturesque. We can all imagine you doing it now, Carlos. Michael Byers?
I love this. I'm more of a white than a red wine type of person, but I am gradually, my palate has been opening to reds a little bit more. This is to me has the prototypical qualities. It's very warm. It's very sophisticated. It's got an earthy tone to it that's very comforting. This is the kind of wine that I would be drinking on a cold winter's evening in front of Netflix watching The Queen's Gambit once again.
Okay.
This is going to be my beverage of choice. This is wonderful. Thank you, Doc.
It's very evocative. So I think of Grenache often. I know people drink Grenaches as a single varietal like this, but they often are part of a blend. So you don't get kind of the fullness of this. I don't know what to describe it as. There's almost a, it's not really a bite, but there's something on the back end of this that is that really grabs you say, oh, that's a different flavor.
You know, the truth is that we tried to bottle this with a little bit of the fermentation CO2, and so that little tiny, you don't even notice, but there's a little prickle right at the at the back end that you've picked up on is intentional, because I feel like it makes the wine a little lighter. It makes the wine a little friendlier. Without it, it would be have a slightly, you know, denser, kind of heavier feel at the back end. And I just felt like this is something that could be done. In fact, I learned about this style in Australia. There's a group of people in the McLaren Vale, like Terra Sakota, the late great, and Drew Noon and such, who make this style of Grenache. And I became fascinated with it, and I thought, I want to do that.
It's also just a gorgeous ruby color.
Yes, it's certainly not a darkly colored wine, and that's kind of Grenache as well. If you want a bunch of color there, often, as you say, people will blend in Syrah and Mourvèd and make a GSM, and they'll get more color out of it that way.
That's Doug Frost, master of wine and master sommelier, our occasional and regular visitor, bringing us great ideas and keeping us up to date on the world of wine with some tips for your holiday season. Thank you so much, Doug.